Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this program here on AFR. Tim, Ed, and Wesley, and now Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm well.
So you wear long sleeves a lot in the summer, don't you?
It's hard to find Paisley shirts that are short sleeved. Go ahead.
I think because obviously you got a watercolor shirt on today.
Yeah.
But it is hard to find colorful, either watercolor or paisley or anything like that that are interesting, that are short sleeved.
And besides, it's 72 degrees where I work.
Yeah,
all year long.
Yeah. You know, I think we probably need to do more fashion on this show.
I don't care. I'm,
what?
Nah.
You don't think?
Well, you ever heard of like antimatter?
Yeah.
Like in science fiction?
Yeah.
Or we're anti-fashion.
You anti-fascist.
Yeah, we're anti-fascists. Fashionists.
Our fashion decisions are made just picking out the shirt we're going to wear in the morning. That's
yes.
about the extent
and,
of it,
and,
isn't it?
And half the time I go into the living room and my darling wife is drinking a cup of coffee, and I, does this go with this?
Oh, you ask?
Yeah.
Yeah, does this match?
If I have a question.
I understand.
Yeah.
Although I can't imagine more interesting radio than talking about designs on shirts.
Yeah, well, watercolors, that's a pretty cool. I've seen that, you wear that before, but Wesley is right. It sort of defines your personality. You know, you're a watercolor kind of guy.
Which, right.
Which means you're very interesting.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. First, I hope so. I try to be.
All right, first story.
And the guy wearing the black shirt with the black t-shirt, what are you saying about him?
Mafia? Not sure what exactly.
What comes to mind?
Yeah. All right, go, Steve.
I'm Johnny Cash. So have you seen the complaints recently about ICE agents who have been going in and they've been wearing masks because the left has been taking pictures of these people, these agents. They've been doxing these agents, publishing their identity, where they live, the names of their kids, and threatening, basically it threatens their families. By that's why they're masking up, so that their families aren't threatened and killed, and because the left is, as we know, has no moral qualms about causing harm and violence. Well, the Democrats know there's nothing they can oppose. Let me say it this way: you don't hate the Democrats near enough. You say that about, you don't hate journalists near enough when they do stupid things. This is Hakeem Jeffries. He is the leader of the House Democrats. He's the highest ranking House member that's a Democrat. And this is what he says about agents who have to mask up to protect their identity so their families aren't targeted. Cut 11.
Every single ICE agent who's engaged in this aggressive overreach and are trying to hide their identities from the American people will be unsuccessful in doing that. This is America. This is not the Soviet Union. We're not behind the Iron Curtain. This is not the 1930s. And every single one of them, no matter what it takes, no matter how long it takes, will, of course, be identified. That, in fact, is the law. And we're going to make sure that the American people have the transparency necessary to hold people accountable when they're folks who cross the line.
Either Hakeem Jeffries, the best interpretation is that he doesn't care about the lives of these and the families of these agents. Worse is he's calling for revenge upon them.
I get the knee, I say knee jerk, I get the first reaction as this is going on to dock, you know, as some of the ICE agents are being doxed and threatened. I get the first reaction, well, how do we prevent this, cover the mask? I do think that there are other ways that they're going to uncover who the agents are. So I don't know if that's politically speaking,
going to stop them.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to stop them enough. I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's a big enough deterrent to outweigh the appearance.
Is somebody calling for violence against ICE agents?
Absolutely. Antifa types. The people that I've seen all the time on my... I saw a video today of a guy that was in a car that said, okay, you have one chance, ICE families, to tell your husbands to sit their butts down and drink their coffee and not go to work, because if they go to work and I'm anywhere around them, you're not going to see them again.
Okay. What, back to this fellow here, Hakeem Jeffries. As you say, he's the top Democrat in the House of Representatives. There's a lot in what he said right there, in the language that he used, that was troubling to me. Not that he wouldn't disagree with ICE agents wearing face covering, although I think he should acknowledge the reasons for it. Even if he's in favor of it, he just sounds like he's a kind of person that's encouraging the doxing. And he used the expression, I want you to listen to him again, aggressive overreach by ICE agents. Did you catch that?
Yes.
And if I were a reporter and he would answer the question, I would ask him, Mr. Jeffries, is Jeffries?
Jeffries.
I would ask him, what do you define for me aggressive overreach by ICE agents? Because as far as I can tell, the ICE agents are only acting to enforce U.S. federal law against people who are in our country illegally.
They're just making arrests.
They're making arrests. So is making arrest acting aggressively? You know, listen closely to the things that he says here. And he also says something about, I can't remember exactly, something about to make sure the American people hold them accountable. Okay, again, not, you would think somebody in his position would say, we're going to have hearings where we're going to make the those in charge of the ICE agency answer questions about this. Okay, well, that's different. When he's talking about the American people, make sure they're accountable or something like that, that almost sounds, maybe I'm reading too much into this, like he's one of the ones who is encouraging the doxing. It's, I'll do the doxing right here in Congress. Right. Listen to the things he says, and notice that he doesn't say anything about the proper role of ICE and how they're not following that. Listen to him.
Every single ICE agent who's engaged in this aggressive overreach and are trying to hide their identities from the American people will be unsuccessful in doing that. This is America. This is not the Soviet Union. We're not behind the Iron Curtain. This is not the 1930s. And every single one of them, no matter what it takes, no matter how long it takes, will, of course, be identified. That, in fact, is the law. And we're going to make sure that the American people have the transparency necessary to hold people accountable when they're folks who cross the line.
There's a host of questions there that he won't answer. What is crossing the line?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the American people are going to hold transparency means we want to know who these people are. And he's like warning. It's like a warning. He says every single ICE agent.
Yeah.
Will be identified. Anyway, I find the way he framed that whole thing just.
Well, let me just say.
And then Wesley.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to read here. I'm reading an article on this topic right now, and it says San Diego Councilman Sean Rivera, who branded the ICE officers, quote, he called them, quote, terrorists. So if you have a public official.
Calling them terrorists.
Listen,
I don't know how they do their job without being seen as aggressive. How do you do that?
Would you please come with me? I'd like
yes,
to
Yes, no,
handcuffs.
Knock, knock. Hey, we're here. Yeah. Hey, we're here to arrest three gang members, and We're going to go down to Subway.
You want to meet us down there?
We'll be back in a couple of hours here. If y'all can have your bags packed,
yeah,
then we'll go, we'll take you. You know what I'm saying? There is no way to do the job of the mandate that ICE agents are given. It's kind of like SWAT or FBI or ATF. These people have to be – they're a different breed, really. Right. Their psychological makeup, it's kind of like people who have to go into combat, you know, in war. They are not they can't – they got to be prepared for the worst. They can't be the nice guys going into that situation. So, at the same time, it is America, and we have to have law and order, and we have to have – we don't want rogue ICE agents going out – you know, terrorizing people. I am
opposed to masks on government agents.
Okay? For different reasons.
I agree with that.
I don't like the way it looks. I think to hold people accountable when they actually do step over the line,
right,
you have to be able to identify them.
Right.
Okay. However, having said that, this is a no-win situation for ICE agents.
Right.
Because if they don't wear masks, they are going to get doxxed, and their families might get hurt because the far left is increasingly violent, and so they're between a rock and a hard place. So
they have to wear the mask.
They have to wear the mask.
At least right now they do.
Yes.
Or either you can say, well, I don't care about the families of the ICE agents.
Right.
Hakeem Jeffries says, we're in America. This isn't Germany in the 1930s. You know, I would submit to you that a Jew in the coming to America, transporting through time from the 1930s, might find an awful lot that's familiar with Germany in the 1930s on college campuses and around this country with the anti-Semitism, with the AFA, with the Antifa types, the riots that are going on. This isn't the America that Jeffries is talking about.
Well, we had Jews burned by a Muslim, an Egyptian, here illegally, that ICE would have deported if they'd gotten a hold of him. He used a makeshift flamethrower. Biden let him in, and he was here in 2022.
He's a white man,
expired.
Though.
Well, then this young couple shot to death in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
To your point, Steve, Jews might find a lot that was very familiar if they were transported from 1930s Germany to the U.S. in 2025.
By the way, some video has been uncovered. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but we now know the reason that this guy that was throwing Molotov cocktails had no shirt on. It's a video of him throwing one and the liquor or whatever's in the flammable substance getting on and catching him on fire as he was throwing
it. That's why he pulled the shirt off?
He had to pull the shirt off, yeah.
All right, next story, Steve.
All right. The White House is dealing with another leak of sorts. This time, for the second time, White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles has been compromised. This time it's her phone that someone tapped into, got into her contacts. They started making calls in her name. They used AI to disguise their voice to call people in her contact list. The White House is kind of keeping it close to the vest as to what they know about this. I suppose they're trying to figure out who hacked it and why. It could be a foreign agent. It could be something local. But this is the second time Wiles has been targeted, and there are a raft of leaks coming out of the Trump administration.
You know, what is scary about this is the potential for AI in very short order to just be able to confuse life. For a while, on X, for example, younger people were making fun of baby boomers who could not tell the difference between a video or a meme that was AI and one that wasn't. But I think increasingly nobody can tell. It's really, and then with the voice, that cloning of the voice, there's going to be times where people in government are going to get a phone call from someone in the administration. It's going to sound like that person. It's going to be from their phone. And they may get information
illicitly. Time to launch the nukes. Let me add something even more scary to this whole discussion. I heard on the way in this morning on a podcast, quantum computing, in short order, will be able to hack any encryption that you can put on an email account, on a bank.
It's over for us. than for the human race.
Well, yeah. that was basically.
I tell you what, let's just go back in time. Maybe in 10 years, people will just throw away all these smart devices and go back to agrarian, little house on the prairie life.
Huh? Either that, or I will say this, that there is a back and forth to technology where there are supposedly encryptions that could be brought to bear that would be uncrackable, and then the bad guys figure something out to crack that. I think what we might see, because, you know, there are people calling for, you know, let's get rid of cash. Let's just all use electronic money. And I'm thinking, are you kidding?
What could go wrong with that?
The federal government can't even protect the Social Security Office and the Defense Department.
Right.
They've all been hacked.
Yeah.
Okay. Corporations have been hacked. All right. So don't tell me we need to do, you know, all digital banking. But I think what you're going to see is increasingly people will go back to some old school stuff.
Mattresses.
So you're telling me the chief of staff of the president of the United States of America had their phone hacked.
That's what I'm saying.
Susie Wiles.
For the second time, it said?
No, the first time it was an email hack in 2024. Of hers.
And they got her contact list and started contacting.
Have you seen her? There's a picture of her operating her phone.
Yeah, it's on this article that you sent around.
She's a baby boomer. Am I right?
Yeah.
I think so. How old is she?
I don't know. She looks like she's around our age.
I don't want to make – she got gray hair, but that doesn't mean somebody's
– I think it's completely irrelevant to the
– Well, no, it is. I got a point to make. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, how old is she?
I don't know. When are you guys
looking at Susie Wiles. And we're going to out her.
Let's go 60.
On her age right
here. Let's dox her. We're going to dox her.
Yeah, we're
going to dox her. Going with 60.
Huh?
She's what?
I'm going to go with 60. I'm guessing. It's like
no, I'm going to say she's 62. She's over 60. 68.
She looks
older
good
than I am.
68.
So here's my point. And I'm not making fun of her. I'm saying she looks like every 68-year-old woman in America with a phone in front of her, doesn't she?
Yes.
And she wouldn't know whether somebody was hacking her phone or not because they're trying to navigate it, and they got one finger doing their texting. Am I right?
Yes.
You see these teenagers?
See them. I am one.
Well, they're texting with all 10 fingers.
Oh, I know.
It's flying.
It's just
like a hummingbird's wings, man.
They don't even have to look.
No, they don't even have to look. And 68-year-olds and me too, we're like going, okay, and I will be there at 10.
Proper English, too. I use proper English, proper punctuation, and that one finger.
Yeah.
Must be pretty fat because I am constantly hitting the wrong key.
Right. Anyway.
And that we haven't even gotten into the voice recognition, the wrong
words. Oh, my goodness.
I know. But anyway, so somebody hacked her phone. Then they tried to make her contacts think they were her.
Yes, they cloned her voice.
It's funny now. Nothing happened. But
yet.
Going forward, you know, with all what y'all are talking about with deep fakes and AI and cloning people's voices.
That's crazy.
We'll have to meet in person.
It's a dangerous high-tech world we live in.
It is indeed.
And, you know, you just worry. I don't want to worry unnecessarily here and bring up doomsday scenarios, but let's all face it. We've been talking about this international cyber warfare that goes on in the drones, for example, which are related to this. I mean, the world's changed, and now you just hope somebody, like, does China hack our infrastructure system?
We don't even know if this was China or Iran.
Right.
No,
right.
It could have been.
Susie Wiles.
They may know more than we do, but we don't know.
Anyway, I just think that we've crossed the technological Rubicon.
Yes.
Okay.
So going back.
All right. Next story, Steve.
All right. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth continues to put the military into fighting shape. We've seen him working out with the troops. We've seen him get rid of all the DEI and trans nonsense, social experimenting in the military. And his latest move, he is renaming a ship named the Harvey Milk that was named during President Obama's term. That's named after a gay rights activist who happened to also be a pedophile. The pedophile part was not, used in the commissioning of the ship, surprisingly enough. But Pete Hegseth is going to rename the Harvey Milk.
And he was a mayor, wasn't he, of San Francisco?
He was a supervisor in San Francisco.
Supervisor, okay.
Yeah, he was shot. Dan White shot him and used the Twinkie defense. That's the first use of the – remember the Twinkie defense?
Oh, that he had had Twinkies and
popped
sugar
up on sugar.
Yeah.
So he went in and he shot Mayor Moscone and
– Yeah, that's right, Mayor Moscone.
And Harvey Milk.
Look, a gay rights activist who was controversial – and let's just say that in terms of his taste, age-wise, okay? And the left and the media ignored all that when this was a destroyer, right?
I believe so.
Christened the Harvey Milk. I don't think that worried China at all. A U.S. Navy with the Harvey Milk as a destroyer. So I like what Pete Hegseth is doing. Let's go back to war fighting and stay away from the DEI and the woke stuff. And Fred was saying, or maybe it was you, Steve, that that in terms of people signing up, the numbers have improved, recruitment.
Very much, yeah.
Since Trump took office.
Yeah, they are. The military is meeting its recruiting goals after, 4 years or more of
of decline and not meeting their recruitment goals. I think Fred said that the U.S. Army is 4 months ahead in its recruitment goals.
I think I saw that number as well. Hey,
Wesley, do you have any comment on this? Pete Hegseth, it's a renaming now.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out. I'm familiar with what you just said about Harvey Milk, but I'm not. What did he do that made him popular?
He was a supervisor in San Francisco. He was the first openly gay supervisor in San Francisco.
Talking about the 60s or 70s, 70,
70, 74, 74, I think. This was also Dianne Feinstein took over as mayor. It was her first public appearance. I was living in the Bay Area at the time. I lived through this. So
that's what he's known for?
Yeah, he was the first openly gay San Francisco.
That's not good enough.
Okay.
What I'm waiting for is he invented the phone.
No, he was a homosexual activist, one of the first ones.
And he was killed. He was in their
some of the people champion him like the people do Martin Luther King Jr. in terms of the civil rights movement. They would say he was a pioneer.
For the left,
he was pioneer in the gay and lesbian movement. That's what they would say.
So for the left, he's an icon.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Next story.
Hey, Tim, I think you probably could talk more about this than I, but it's U.S. Open time starts this weekend. And leading into this.
For golf, not tennis.
For golf. Yeah. U.S. Open for golf. And leading into this tournament, this is the only tournament where just any Joe that can handle a golf club and has a couple good rounds can play in some limited spots in the U.S. Open. There is a 17-year-old high school junior. His name is Mason Howell. He's from Snellville, Georgia, and he qualified for the U.S. Open.
Mason did.
So 17-year-old junior as an amateur. He's like the eighth-ranked amateur in the country, so he's not even the first or second. But he will be playing the Open.
I tell you what, I put a lot of work in with Mason, and I'm glad to see that he's
succeeding.
He's making it in the golf world.
It has worked out, yeah.
That is a the U.S. Open golf tournament, which is annual, is you do qualify. A lot of people try to qualify from around the country, and you don't have to be a professional golfer to make it.
That's going to look good on his resume.
Yeah. Very few do, but hey, it's the dream, right?
He's committed to play at the University of Georgia.
Has he?
Oh, is that right? Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Our thanks to Ed, Wesley, and also to Fred Jackson, Jenna Ellis, and our producer, Brent Creeley. We'll see you tomorrow.